So we move now to Deuteronomy chapter 32. We're doing the last three chapters of our book. This is a song which Yahweh commanded Moses to compose, and that's mentioned there in those chapters, and to recite in the hearing of the whole assembly of Israel. It's not my intention to sing it for you this morning. I know, it's all... Now, an exceptionally gifted poet of the Deuteronomic school is reflecting now in this section on the tragic history of his people, hoping its lessons will be learnt and that the memory of the justice and faithfulness of Yahweh, in spite of their injustices and unfaithfulness, will effect a profound repentance. The form of the poem is that of the judgment speeches of the 8th century prophets, which may well be its origin in the northern kingdom just prior to the collapse. Hard to pin these things down, but it's a likely thing, which obviously means Moses didn't write it. In chapter 32, verses 1 to 6, Israel is at fault, not Yahweh. And this is the text. Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak. Let the earth hear the words of my mouth. Thus are the two witnesses, heaven and earth. May my teaching drop like the rain, my speech condense like the dew, like gentle rain on grass, like showers on new growth. And you've got to imagine the harp in the background just playing through this. For I will proclaim the name of Yahweh. I will ascribe greatness to our God. The rock, his work is perfect, his judgments in every way. A faithful God without any wrong, just and upright is he. Yet his degenerate children have dealt falsely with him, a perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus repay Yahweh, O foolish and senseless people? Is not he your father? That's very rare in the Old Testament to call God your father. New Testament's full of it, thanks to Jesus. But it's rare, it's there, but daringly there in the poetic language. Do you thus repay, is he not your father who created you, who made you and brought you into existence? That hymn would not have been sung on Mount Nebo, as the story even says, because you remember all the generation that sinned in the desert have died, haven't they? This is the new generation, their children, who are going to go in and inherit the land. Or why would Moses be calling them a crooked and perverse generation? So this is a later perspective, looking back on assuming that this is the reason why the northern kingdom fell, Israel, and then later, what went wrong with Judah. And it's all trying to draw people to obey God. Remember the days of old. Consider the years long past. Ask your father, and he will inform you. Ask your elders, and they will tell you. When the Most High apportioned the nations, when he divided humankind, he fixed the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the gods. So each god up in the Olympian gods had their, or Zaphon in their, they had their own little country. Yahweh's own portion was his people, and Jacob was his allotted share. So the Most High, that's the high god of the Semitic peoples, El. But Yahweh was given this part, this beautiful land of Israel. He sustained him in a desert land, in a howling wilderness waste, And the word used in the Hebrew for the howling wilderness waste is bohu. Jump back. Do you remember the opening of the book of Genesis? Over the everything was tohu va bohu, emptiness and deserted waste, before the God said, let there be light. So we're going back to the chaos words that are used in Jeremiah and then in the book of Genesis. Well, here's the same word here. It was a howling wilderness waste. He shielded him, cared for him, guarded him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirs up its nest and hovers over its young, as it spreads its wings and takes them up and bears them aloft on its pinions, Yahweh alone guided him. No foreign god was with him. He did it on his own. Beautiful image of the eagle, which we've already had in Exodus. We'll do it when we start Exodus again. You know, I've carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Here's a similar image of the mother bird. And I'm told, and I presume it's true, I suppose Attenborough would know, and I should write to him and ask him. But, you know, the mother eagle goes right, obviously because of predators, goes right up on the top of some beetling crag and has her young in a nest, and because they're safe up there. But the little eagle one day has to learn to fly. So the mother eagle comes down and sweeps the nest into the void with her wing. And the poor little eaglet, never having flown before, goes, and then the mother goes down underneath and catches it on its pinions. And the little bloke says, oh, God, mum's gone bizarre. You know, she's, I don't mind being kicked out of home. I know I'm 30, but... So he's been kicked out of home. And then the mother takes it back to the crag again, and the little one thinks, oh, gee, mum, I like the way you get kicks. Then the mum does it again. And then finally, apparently, the mother eagle with the little one on her, that's starting, the mother eagle then goes and drops really suddenly. And the little eagle... goes like that, like teaching someone to ride a bike. You know, you run along behind them and then you let them go, and they suddenly realise that they're actually riding the bike. Well, this little eagle starts to fly, and then it's free, it's forever. So God was like that. An eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its young, spreads its wings, takes them up and bears them aloft on its pinions. That's what God did to the people in the desert. Beautiful poetic image. He set him atop the heights of the land and fed him with produce of the field. He nursed him with honey from the crags, oil from the flinty rocks, curds from the herd and milk from the flock, with fat of lambs and rams, Bashan bulls and goats, together with the choicest wheat. You drank fine wine from the blood of the grape. So some of this imagery comes. Read the Bible as poetry and drama, and you get it. Read it as historically accurate recording of facts, and you end up with the rest of them. Fundamentalist gobbledygook. Yahweh ate Jacob, ate his fill. Jeshurun. We've actually met that in Isaiah. Jeshurun, an affectionate term for a child, and it seems to come from Yashar, which means the upright one, good little girl or good little boy. Yeshurun. Jacob, Yeshurun grew fat and kicked, little child. You grew fat, bloated and gorged. He abandoned God who made him and treated as a fool the rock of his salvation. They made him jealous with strange gods. With abhorrent things they provoked him. They sacrificed to demons, not God. To deities they had never known. To new ones recently arrived, whom your ancestors had not feared. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you. You forgot the God who gave you birth. Verses 19 to 25 talk about the consequences of infidelity. I'll let you read that for yourself. Then 26 to 35 is Israel's enemies are warned not to take advantage because Yahweh is still caring for his people, so don't take advantage of them when they're down. And then I will read to you from verse 36 to 39, Yahweh's enduring commitment to Israel. Indeed, Yahweh will vindicate his people, comfort his servants, when he sees that their power is gone, neither bond nor free remaining. Then he will say, where are their gods, the rock in which they took refuge, who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their libations? Let them rise up and help you. Let them be your protector. See now that I, even I, am he. There is no God beside me. I kill, I make alive, I wound, I heal. No one can deliver from my hand. So they've got this image of God, the Almighty, doing whatever God wills on the earth. Verse 40 to 43 talks about Yahweh's enemies are going to fail, and then comes the 44 to 47, the pleading with them to choose life. Moses came and recited all the words of this song in the hearing of the people, he and Joshua, son of Nun. And this song came from God, of course, inspired by God, as they presented. When Moses had finished reciting all these words to all of Israel, he said to them, take to heart all the words that I'm giving in witness against you today. Give them as a command to your children, so that they may diligently observe all the words of this law. This is no trifling matter for you. Rather, it is your very life. Through it, you may live long in the land that you're crossing over the Jordan to possess. Doesn't it make you love Jesus at the Last Supper when he says, after all this we've been through, I have one commandment to give you, love one another as I have loved you. And wouldn't it be wonderful? And it is there, if you read canon law, everything needs organising, no doubt. And some people just love organising. So you've got people there doing nothing else but organise, and you've got books full of laws, but at the end of the law it says, all of these laws are there for the pastoral good of the people. They're all about life, you know. But that can be forgotten, can't it? That last bit, that key bit. And we can become rigid on all the bits and pieces. And Jesus says to you and to me and to your married sons and married daughters who are in a second relationship because the first one broke down and they're still young and they want kids and their husband didn't want them and walked out on them and they want to have a child. It's all fair enough, isn't it? And they've got all these systems and it goes on and on and on and on and on. But you've got to find a way through all that. And the way through has to be love one another as I have loved you. And yeah. And the church really wants us to do that. But sometimes we're, as pastors, we're not courageous enough to do it. It's easier to stick with the law than to go out and do something a bit daring that brings love. Do you know what I'm trying to say, don't you? And so we've got to trust the church, really, in its final desires. And I'm talking to myself, aren't I? You can hear that. Part 6 is the end, and it's Moses' blessing and his death. 32 verse 48 to 52 is from an editor of the priestly school. It's been added in here somewhere. Moses has to die outside the promised land. We're told that. We're reminded of that. Chapter 33 verses 1 to 29. Each tribe is blessed. And I won't read, you can read that for yourself. Judah, all the different blessings. And the big tribes get a big blessing, the little tribes get a little blessing. And this seems to be composed in the highlands of the Joseph tribes, because Judah doesn't get the best blessing at all, Joseph gets it. So it helps you see where it was probably written in the northern kingdom. Then we come to chapter 34. Then, this is a beautiful conclusion really to our study, Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho, and Yahweh showed him the whole land. Yahweh said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to Abram, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, 'I will give it to your descendants.' I've let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there." Then Moses, the servant of Yahweh, died there in the land of Moab. At Yahweh's command, he was buried in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no one knows his burial place to this day. No one knows his burial place to this day. That couldn't have been written in the 12th century BC, could it? You've got to read this. Once you see, it kind of opens up nicely. Moses was 120 years old. That's the perfect age, by the way. So keep going. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His sight was unimpaired, a bit like yours, John. He'd got his cataract removed, and his vigour was not abated. I saw on television the other night a woman of 90-something, and she was with a big thing, with a shot put and a... I thought, good on you, girl. Well, sight unimpaired and vigour not abated. So all you wimps... Verse 8. The Israelites wept for Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. Then the period of mourning for Moses was ended. Joshua, son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him. The laying on of hands still goes on. That's the symbol of the handing. And the Israelites obeyed him, doing as Yahweh had commanded Moses. So the authority has been handed on. Never since has there risen a prophet in Israel like Moses, whom Yahweh knew face to face. He was unequaled for all the signs and wonders that Yahweh sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh and all his servants and his entire land, and for all the mighty deeds and all the terrifying displays of power that Moses performed in the sight of all Israel.